Welcome to the Ethics Experts, where we're elevating ethics and compliance and HR to the strategic level it's supposed to be.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Ethics Experts. We are here today with Karen Holly. Hi, Karen.
Hi, how are you today, Nick?
Great. Thank you so much for making time for us and joining us on the Ethics Experts. We're really excited to have you on. Before we get started in our topic, which is the next installment in our Vendor Pain Point series, I'd love if you can just spend a couple of minutes getting our listeners, introducing our listeners to you. Where have you come from? How did you get into this game?
Sure.
And tell us a little bit about your organization as well, please.
Okay. I'm a registered nurse, and I originated my nursing career in Philadelphia and also moved on to Connecticut and Georgia. And during that time, you know, did a lot of clinical areas such as hemodialysis, med-surg nursing, home health, et cetera. So after moving out of that area, I kind of moved into case management for a health plan up in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I did a little bit of management for a clinical urban clinic actually in Connecticut, and then went into workers' comp for a large hotel company, international hotel company, for managing their workers' comp claims as well as their general liability claims with the adjusters. Moved into utilization review, and from there I transitioned into risk management. So I've been in risk management for the majority of the time for the last few years. And after I transitioned into a leadership role in risk management, I was asked by my CEO to take over compliance, as the compliance officer at that time was retiring from her role and moving on. So once I transitioned from risk management into compliance, that was a big step because I really didn't know much about compliance. And it was kind of like a sink or swim. So,
yeah, right.
Which I think it is with most folks, you know, unless you have training in undergrad or graduate studies in compliance, it's like, you know, you learn as you go. So I've been doing that since about 2009. And just recently with our organization here in South Jersey and Spirit of Health, we have taken over the ethics component of from the risk management department here. So now it's corporate compliance and ethics. So I'm the director with my team here at Inspira. So we're embarking on something new this year with the ethics component, in addition to our privacy management and all of our other compliance management areas that we have been doing for years now.
So corporately, how do you think about this change? How does ethics being added to your plate, so to speak, sort of change your approach or change sort of how you think about the team that you're over or the function that you're over?
I think it gives us a little bit more bandwidth as far as some of the types of issues that we deal with on a day-to-day basis. A lot of times, you know, before we were talking about, you know, trying to stay out of the crosshairs of the government, whereas now we also want to make sure that we're providing ethically safe care and appropriate care for not only our patients, but our, you know, family members, our employees. We want to be sensitive to some of the political environment that's going on. We want to be sensitive to diversity and inclusion. So some of the things that people, you know, buzzwords that people are talking about in the last couple of years kind of throws those components into our function on a day-to-day basis, in addition to just straight compliance. So now we're dealing with ethics. We have a little bit more of a broad way to cast our net in order to make sure that our environment here at the health system is, you know, we're doing the right thing.
So in a certain sense, perhaps in one sense, when you were just doing the compliance piece, it was sort of just playing defense. And then now that you got the ethics piece, you can kind of play offense as well and put some things in place that are, you know, above kind
Sorry
of,
about that.
No, you're fine. Above just kind of, to your point, staying out of the government crosshairs, but now trying to create an environment that's going to allow people to flourish or allow that patient to stay front and center. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's accurate. And we want to make sure that we have all the players at the table when we're doing like end of life decisions and working with our physicians for, best practices and ethical decisions for families, for patients. We just want to make sure we have a comprehensive interdisciplinary group to provide those services for our patients and for our employees and for our physicians. Correct. You're absolutely right.
And perhaps you're kind of still working through this, or at least your team at large is still kind of working through this, but what sort of mentality shift do you think comes along with that addition of this new element to your responsibility set?
I think it gives us of course we've been concentrating on compliance, but it gives us a little bit more bandwidth as far as what we can say that our expertise is in.
Right.
One of the things that we realized when we took over the ethics from risk management was it's all, hands on deck sort of thing. It's not just the person who has already had ethics experience, but the contract specialist who we work with, the privacy manager who we work with, our coding specialist, everybody has a hand in it, and we're able to contribute our own ideas and background to, make it a program that really is functional and very valuable for the rest of the organization.
Yeah, it kind of allows you, to your point, to add a new dimension to your impact, which is really exciting.
Yes. Yep. Exactly. It's very nice because we have such different backgrounds on our team, it really just gives it a broader perspective across the board. So we're able to be that much more valuable for our colleagues.
Yeah. And, you touched on something here, which is essentially this diversity thing. And I think diversity really has multiple dimensions, right? I mean, sometimes we just talk about it in terms of different sexes or different races or different religions, but there's also this really, there's a lot of rich diversity that if an organization can make it flourish, or if an organization can open its team up to it, to tap into that diversity of experience or that diversity of personality types, that can really bring a lot more impact to the goal that's trying to be achieved. Have you seen that as you guys have changed into this new mode?
Well, now we're talking about that now, and one of the things that you touched on was, yes, there's a diversity of backgrounds and experiences. There are, a lot of times when some organizations are looking for fresh new talent, that might be a younger demographic, whereas we need to tap into those who are seasoned and have been in the profession for a lot longer, so that we can not only take the fresh new talent, but also that seasoned talent and kind of make something that's really bigger and better as we go along through being diverse and through being inclusive of our workforce.
So that's a great point. It's almost like a diverse mentality towards your view of diversity itself, because diversity is not just this one thing. Okay, go younger. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That's,
absolutely.
That's interesting. I feel like there's a whole new series in there. We should start together.
Yeah. that's a whole topic in itself. Absolutely.
That's a whole topic in itself. It's just kind of interesting to see, more and more people are kind of talking about this stuff, because as the landscape continues to shift, and as sort of responsibilities shift, and as light bulbs go on at the top, as we were talking about, and there are different groupings of responsibilities within an organization, it really opens up the opportunity for new combinations and new unique perspectives to sort of intermix and interplay or cross-pollinate to, again, accelerate, towards this strategic goal that whatever the organization in question has on their docket.
Right. And also, especially with healthcare, you're also serving such a diverse patient group. Yeah, you want to hear what, some of the more seasoned professionals have to say about how you want to best serve your, senior populations, as well as how to reach out from the perspective of a millennial, how to best reach our millennials as far as, bringing them in for services or providing that community contact that they really need.
That's a great point. Because it's not just about meeting the diverse needs of an employee base or tapping into the diverse potential of your team, but also applying your services to the diverse needs of your, to your point, diverse patient population.
Customer base. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Exactly. Yeah.
I'd love to kind of transition into some of the vendor stuff. I'd love to talk about how, you know, you guys use external vendors. What portion of things do you keep in house? What kind of stuff do you guys outsource? And what kind of pain points have you seen, not only sort of in your current role, but maybe even a little bit more broadly over, you know, the last 5-10 years in your experience?
Sure. So we parcel out a lot of our services under a third party vendor, or second party vendor for that matter. Our compliance, the incident management database is a third party vendor. We have a contract database. We're responsible for contracts along with the legal department in our and we use a contract database that's fairly new for us, and we're very happy with it. We have E&M coding, evaluation and management coding audits that are performed by, you know, one of our coders, and that is a even another vendor. We have vendor risk assessments, which are monitored by our privacy manager, trying to make sure that our vendors are brought on board initially with some kind of risk score that we're comfortable with, and if we identify a high-risk area, we'll communicate with that vendor in order to address, you know, tampering down that risk. We also have a electronic health record access management program, which kind of monitors when people are accessing records, you know, whether or not it looks like it's an appropriate access versus a non-appropriate access, and disciplinary actions that go along with that. And we also have a vendor for education for our providers, which we're working with a joint providership to offer, you know, AMA credits for physicians. So we have a lot of different vendors that we're working with for our compliance program in order to make sure, you know, that we're meeting the needs of our, you know, employees and for our management for patient issues. So. And with that, you know, just trying to keep on top and everything organized, it can be a challenge, but at least we know who we're working with.
Right. What sort of challenges have, I'm sure you've had a wide array of vendor experiences. What are some of the pain points that you've noticed, whether it's with current vendors or just sort of more broadly, like I said, as this landscape has shifted over the last few years?
Yeah. So one of the things that I talked with my colleagues about not too long ago regarding our vendors is when we have high turnover for our vendors, that's a pain point because we're really looking for consistent account managers who will be responsive to our issues and follow up with us and, you know, get things resolved. And, you know, if you have someone who's got a vendor who's got high turnover, we just right. never know who we're going to talk to from time to time regarding any issues that need to be resolved. One of the other things that I'd identify with one of our vendors was that their platform was not very user friendly. Initially, when we had the demonstration prior to purchasing it, it appeared that it would be very useful, very easy to operate. And as we got into it, it was like, oh, this doesn't work. And to add insult to injury, that vendor uses another vendor to use the report writing capabilities of the, you know, product itself. So right. it's like we don't even have a relationship with that other vendor that has the report writing capability.
Yeah, which is extremely frustrating, right? Because I don't know, it's like you buy this thing, you can't really test drive it.
Right.
You get the car and it's like, you know, the guy who sold you the car, he can't even work on the car or something.
Right. Exactly. It's like, okay, this person, I mean, it's totally, you know, it's kind of hands off, but at the same time, you have to have something in place in order to, you know, make a report. And the learning curve was extensive. And then just really unresponsiveness to our request for risk assessment. Like, for instance, with the vendor risk assessment program that we use, our vendor that does that, when we don't have responses from our other vendors and answering that risk assessment, that's a pain point because, you know, a lot of times people jump on board and say, yeah, we'll fill this out as far as our risk assessment initially. And then, you know, 2 years down the line, when you want to renew the agreement, you're not getting as much responsiveness because they already figure, oh, we already did that a couple of years ago. So that's a pain point because we don't know if your systems or your personnel or your titles within the department have changed such that it will increase your risk over a 2 year period. We need to, you know, be on board as far as, you know, where the vulnerabilities are. So.
Yeah, I think people are risk averse for a reason, and that's because risks are always changing, to your point, right? The right. circumstances, the regulatory landscape you're responding to is changing, the circumstances, to your point, at that vendor may change, and right. how do you have the high certainty you need to do your job right unless you can get those loops closed in a timely fashion with high, you know, high information value.
Exactly. And one of the things that we've done in the last year or two is make sure that the vendor risk assessment is part of the contracting, the agreement initially. Because before we would, you know, go ahead and get the contract or the agreement implement it. And then on the back end, or maybe 6 months into, we'll say, okay, we need to do a risk assessment. Well, that's, you know, that we changed that. So that way we're going into it. Yeah, and
then you find yourself kind of arm wrestling with them because then, you know, I'll get around to it when I can is their response as opposed to your point, building it right into that contract.
Yes.
Now they have to perform to it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it gives us a better idea of what we're walking into, you know, when the initial basis, but at the same time, we're building into our contracting database that we're not going to renew this contract unless we can get a completed vendor assessment done.
Yeah, because you know, at the end of the day, it's on you, right?
Right.
I mean, it falls to your feet to make sure that these risks are extinguished or known or handled or whatever. And unfortunately, you need that correspondence back and forth with the vendor to check those boxes and make sure those loops are closed.
Absolutely. And it puts us in a bad spot with regulators who are looking to make sure that, okay, you're using this vendor. Have you even taken a look at, you know, what the risks are with them?
Right. Let's talk a little bit, you know, this is a great segue into the advice section. Mm-hmm. So you can get out your tweed jacket with the leather elbows and maybe your pipe, and you can kind of pontificate a little bit now on some best practices and just some wisdom for our listeners around some best practices in avoiding some of these pitfalls. I think you talked about your incident management, how there was some frustration with that with regard to the getting up the learning curve and so forth. You brought up a great best practice around building right into the contract some requirements for vendors. Someone who's just coming into the seat, kind of similar to how you did when you took over for the person who retired, what sort of advice would you give them to help them get up their learning curve more quickly?
I think that it's very important to join or participate in the industry or professional associations. You know, like HCCA or some of SCCE. These organizations have a wealth of knowledge. I know that the Society for Corporate Compliance and Ethics has a podcast as well that I listen to from time to time. And it's, you know, interesting because it's not just healthcare, but it's also different other industries that have ethics components, and just being able to hear about artificial intelligence and you know, getting bored with some of the new technology and things like that, that's very helpful. I also would suggest that anyone coming into the role of compliance and ethics would join LinkedIn, because that's a great way to, you know, reach out to people who might have the information that you're looking for. They're posting, you know, articles or, you know, videos or things like that that of interest that might be very valuable for you. And you're able to cross-reference with them and you know, network with these folks as well. And also make sure, you know, that you have the ability to attend conferences and receive newsletters from, whether it's Becker's Hospital Review or the OIG Fraud, Waste, and Abuse Report, some of the state Medicaid reports that might come along. And, you know, a lot of the legal databases and things like that, that have case law. So some of those things that come across your desk or across your computer are very valuable. You kind of, you know, take a glance, you know, for whatever reason to take a look and familiarize yourself with the content. That's a great way to really get yourself as far as your feet wet in ethics and compliance.
That's great advice. Love the idea of really engaging in LinkedIn. I think it's a really underutilized tool, especially for the ethics and compliance and HR space in general. You really see the sales function engages big time there. You see the marketing really engages there, right? Entrepreneurs really engage there. But I feel, at least in my experience, the business we're in or the functions that we're in don't utilize it to the extent that I think we could. And some of the network effects that some of these other functions are able to really accelerate with, we end up not really taking advantage of. So I'm just so glad you brought that up. That's such a powerful way to make connections, build a network, and really start to drive some change.
Absolutely. It really keeps you on point as far as some of the industry changes on the, high executive level, as well as some of the minutiae that, you know, it might be something that, you know, might be local or just something that's, you know, off to the side as far as tangential. Like the AI thing is getting really big in healthcare. Mm-hmm. And I think when I went to a conference recently where you're talking about AI and how it's going, you know, ethics is really very much involved with that because, you know, they are, you know, making images of people that don't even exist. And whether they're using algorithms to make decisions and things like that, are you able to make a decision that's ethical with an algorithm, or do you really need a human touch to it? So it's mm-hmm. a lot of stuff that's going on that people need to pay attention to. And some of that, it will be in LinkedIn and it will be in some of these industry conferences, as well as, you know, newsletters, et cetera. It's really interesting.
Yeah. And it's so hard for people in our industry to sometimes pull up, you know, you're focused, your head is down, you're focused, doing your daily tasks, managing your risk, playing whack-a-mole or whatever you're doing, to pull your head up and move over into this area and spend some time investigating what's coming down the pike or trying to see around that curve. But that's really where a lot of the leverage points can be had.
Right, absolutely.
So when you're looking at a new vendor, what sort of things are going through your mind? You've been in your seat for a while. I'm sure you've had some vendor turnover and so forth. What sort of things are you looking for in a vendor, whether that be a brand promise or some kind of a guarantee or some kind of an ethos thing? What sort of things are you really trying to cue in on as you're doing that screening process over and above whatever RFP process that's grabbing all that objective data?
Right. So one of the things that our group does, our team really sits in from our vice president on down to everybody else, is we sit in on the demos. We want to talk and ask questions and kind of get a touchy-feely appreciation for what this product is or what the software is or whatever it might be. And one of the things that we follow up with is making sure that we get references for like industries such as ourselves. We want to find out, you know, what other health systems feel about a certain product. We don't necessarily want to know what another insurance company feels about a product because we're not an insurance company. So we want to make sure we have references that are valuable and speak to what it is that we want to find out about the quality of the product and services. We want to make sure that there is a ability to schedule and follow up phone calls to track the successes of the progress for the issues that are, you know, that we're encountering after we implement the program. Say, for instance, if we have a software, we want to be able to have an account manager who's going to be responsive and will set us up with whomever it is that we need to resolve our issue. And we don't want them to wait 2 weeks to call us back. We want to make sure that, you know, we're looking for somebody who's going to support us. And that's really one of the things that it's really, really important for us, because a lot of times you can buy software, you can buy a product, and the vendor already made the sale. And, you know, that's problematic if they're not really coming through with the services that they're looking for in an expedient manner.
And I think that's a huge point. And I think particularly in healthcare, there's few things that's really just solved by software, right?
Right.
There's always this sort of human element, even on the outsource piece,
right,
where you need someone to talk to, or you need someone to answer your questions, or, you know, I think earlier you were talking about how when there's a lot of turnover, it becomes kind of frustrating because you don't know who you're going to talk to, and you don't, you know,
yeah.
If it takes, to your point, 3 days to get a question answered, well, your boss may right. want that answer immediately, right?
Exactly. And one of the things that we want to be able to assure our board of trustees is that we do have, you know, responsive vendors, that we do have the reports or products that we need to provide at our quarterly meetings, et cetera, on time and ready to go. You don't want to go into your board meeting and say, I don't have the information because nobody ever got back to me. Then you're going to say, what kind of vendor do you have? So,
well, and then it's on you at that point, right? I mean, at
right,
the end of the
exactly.
day, you're responsible for that. So,
yes.
And I think that could be part of the reason, not part of it, but at least an aspect of it, why the functions we're talking about, whether it's ethics and compliance or whether it's HR, or whether it's risk, why it's had a hard time ascending up, because they're largely viewed as cost centers.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have this vendor issue that can sometimes kind of gum up the machine and
right.
make these functions look less productive
mm-hmm.
than they actually are. Or, you know, is there any truth to what I'm saying, you think?
Yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of times when you're running into a brick wall, it, you know, it really kind of, you just don't want to make your compliance and ethics program look like it's ineffective. That's always a risk. So
internally, you're saying?
Yes.
Right.
You know, one of the, I lost my train of thought, but one of the things we always want to make sure is we prepare for our quarterly meetings. We have our agenda set. We have our reports ready to go probably about 6 months before the meeting, and we'll tweak it as, you know, we're coming closer to it. But we want to be prepared, and we want to make sure we're troubleshooting way ahead of time before, you know, that meeting comes upon us and we don't have any good data. And that's always problematic. So that's very important for us to look like we're doing something and we're making a difference.
Right. It's important. It's always important to manage up, not only within your own department, but within your own mm-hmm. company.
Right. And one of the other things that I just wanted to mention was with our with the growth of our health system, you know, we have been acquiring new physician practices on a pretty good clip. And when ethics and compliance comes into it, we're able to step in, take a look at, you know, the acquisition itself, the potential component that we're going to purchase or acquire, and, you know, give a risk assessment as to, is this something that's good or is this something that's bad? And that's why it's so important for compliance and ethics to be at the table
100%.
When we're buying, you know, new businesses. So,
well, there's things, you know, that another person in that diligence process wouldn't even know to look for.
Exactly. And that's why we're
massive,
you know,
risks many times.
Exactly. Especially when there's a physician practice, we have a, you know, we have a coding function within our department. And, you know, you're so busy, if you're so busy trying to buy a physician practice and you have no idea whether or not that practice is functioning appropriately or accurately as far as a coding history or, you know, billing and documentation, et cetera, and you acquire something that's faulty, and you'll be like, oh my goodness, how come I didn't know this ahead of time? Well, that's part of what we're doing.
Right,
we're offering that value. Yeah.
Right.
So.
Well, this has been a really great episode. I think we had some really great takeaways. I love
right.
what you were saying about trying to get involved in that M&A process. I think we're going to continue to see a lot more consolidation, particularly in the HR space. And I think some
of
the best practices you mentioned, both in terms of, hey, are you following up with me? Hey, do you have a nice reference for me in sort of a like-size industry and a like-sized company
right.
that I can gut check and make sure that, you know, this proposal is holding weight, or that this relationship is not going to ultimately not only cause me to have egg on my face internally, but also prevent me from prevent me from allowing my organization to face risks that it otherwise shouldn't.
Exactly. Yep, that's correct.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today on the Ethics Experts. Before we go, one more thing. Can you give us some metrics around the size of your organization?
Yeah, we have approximately 6,000 employees. We have 150 locations in South Jersey, quite a few physician practices, and we have urgent cares, we have family medicine, we have specialties, we have three hospitals, and ancillary health services around the South Jersey area in about, I think it's four or five counties.
Wow, so well, you have a tough out. Job if you got to oversee all of that. That is a lot of diverse, you know, activities, a lot of different yep. employees, a lot of different locations. That's a lot of plates to keep spinning in the air. So,
yeah,
great job.
Okay, thanks, Nick. I appreciate it. We work hard and we try to make sure everything's on the up and up, because we definitely, like any organization, don't want to be on the radar of the government.
Well, I think you guys have built a really nice reputation in your organization, and you know, I think you've definitely have your work cut out for you, but getting this ethics piece in, it's going to be interesting to see the kind of impact you're going to be able to make over the next few years with these new tools in place.
Yeah, absolutely. Since we are taking over to ethics, we have a conference every year, which is getting bigger and bigger. We have speakers from around the nation that come in and speak with us for the day, and it's just a great ethics conference. So we're very excited about taking that over.
Well, thanks again for joining us, Karen. This has been great. This is going to be the year that we elevate ethics and compliance and get them that seat at the table that we're all that we've all been working for. So thank you so much for your insight and your advice, and for joining us on the Ethics Experts.
Thanks, Nick. I appreciate it.
All right. So that's it. We'll wrap there. Thank you so much. This was freaking awesome.
Oh, I'm glad.
These are not always this good. Okay.
Oh, really good. I'm glad to hear that. Are we able to, is there a certain time when it's going to be available for everyone to hear?
Yeah. So what our plan here is we're going to stockpile a few episodes from the research we've done. Kind of come out with a bunch of content for someone to be like, oh, okay. You know, cause you know, these are kind of bite-sized episodes. These aren't, two-hour long podcasts. So we're trying to stockpile a bunch of episodes, and we're going to launch later on in the quarter. So when we get closer to launch, we'll reach out to you. We'll send you the link so that you can share it around with your team and share it around with your family, and they can see what an expert you actually are.
Oh, great. That's awesome. Looking forward to it. Can't wait to hear the other speakers as well.
What did you say?
I said, I can't wait to hear the other speakers and topics as well.
Yeah, you know, it's really cool to hear kind of the common threads through this, because we're talking to people, Compliance Line sponsors this. And so we're talking to people from all these different walks of life and all these different industries. And what's really interesting is to see this common thread that we're starting to see through more and more of these conversations, where I think ethics and compliance folks, they want to make a difference. They want to make an impact. They see the impact that they could potentially make, and it's like everyone's kind of butting up against the same glass ceiling, and the glass ceiling is really an encapsulation by the sort of management at large or the board of directors at large, where these light bulbs haven't been turned on yet for the massive power that this thing can have if it's actually unleashed and it's not looked at as just this cost center, but it's looked at as a real strategic thing to drive the purpose of the organization forward. It's just, we're hearing those same notes in all these different conversations where we're talking to healthcare, we're talking to manufacturing, or we're talking just really everywhere. So it feels like an appropriate time for this thing to come out. It feels like an appropriate time for like an advocate to come out and really try to help turn those light bulbs on at the top. Because I mean, we've seen in our own organization, as we've unleashed, you know, these functions that can actually affect the workforce or actually affect the workplace.
Right.
It just changes how everybody feels. And that's how, all actions are rooted in emotion, right? So if you feel safer in an organization, or you feel like there's an actual purpose to an organization that resonates with you, well, now you don't need a bridle to kind of keep you marching forward. You're going to be running forward on your own will. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's
absolutely.
It's a tangible thing that, you know, a CEO sometimes can't really wrap his head around because he's so bottom line minded. so sales-minded or whatever, it's easy to fall back into that old paradigm of, you know, compliance is check the box, HR is check the box. That's the first place I'm going to do cuts from.
Right. And then one of the things that, you know, we're not a profit center, we're not going to make you a zillion dollars, but at the same time, our purpose really is to save you money. And that's just, you know, I think that's equally as important when you're running a business. We can save you money through this risk assessment.
100%.
Yeah. So, you know, that, you know, it, as long as they can understand that's just as important, I think that they'll value it, you know, the ethics and compliance that much more.
Well, this is the year. We're gonna do it this year.
Awesome.